This is another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk, and you can find out more at the website allbook-books.com. The book that was discussed last week, Hillary S. Webb's Yanantin and Masintin in the Andean World, Complementary Dualism in Modern Peru. So this is a first, because it's the first time I've done a part two book review with the author and then without the author. Yet she was pleased to hear that I'm doing it. So her book, University of New Mexico Press, 2012. Because last week the topic was discussed a lot, but oftentimes it's nice to hear more specifics about the work that maybe in an interview conversation is a bit too dry. But I think in rereading some of these quotes, basically they're quotes that stood out to me and that I underlined. So it's my, you know, as with anybody's reading, it's my bias of what I think is significant. And it begins with, etymologically, the preface yana, Y-A-N-A, means help, while the suffix N-T-I-N means inclusive in nature with implications of totality, spatial inclusion of one thing in another, or identification of two elements as members of the same category. Now, some of these, this is referenced, as was discussed in the conversation with Hillary. It's an autoethnography, so some of the ethnography comes from sources, and then others from the actual people, the shaman she met. So I'll read some of their quotes as well. But this part continues. Some scholars break down the word slightly differently, translating yana as black in the sense of dark or obscure, and contrast it to light rather than in the sense of black as opposed to white. So maybe some yin-yang going on there. I don't know for sure. Some scholars have translated Yanantin as the complement of difference. However, when I asked Amado about this particular definition, he was quick to emphasize that it is not the differences that are identified within a Yanantin relationship, but rather what the two energies bring together as a parity. For us, Yanantin doesn't focus on the differences between two beings. This is what disconnects them. Instead, we focus on the qualities that bring them together. That is Yanantin. We don't really see the differences. That's why we see them as not necessarily opposed, but as complementary. One on its own can't hold everything, can't take care of everything. Not only are they great together, but they need to be together. There is no other way. When there is another, it represents extra strength for both. And further down, she says, when Amado was six, he was struck by lightning, which in the Andean shamanic lineage is traditionally how the neophyte shaman is chosen by the spirits to walk the medicine path. His grandfather, a renowned PAQO healer, took this as a sign that he should pass on his teachings, all the stories, ceremonies, rituals, and other wisdom of the lineage that he carried, to his grandson. The early days of Amado's training were done in secret, for even in his small community, the Catholic influence of the Spanish invasion had left in its wake a suspicion of, and therefore a repression of, the medicine teachings. There was a lot of oppression for medicine men back then, Amado recalled. I was not allowed to talk about it with anybody, not even my own parents. My grandfather would always be very careful not to talk about it with anyone. The whole community knew him as a midwife, as a healer, but was he known as a keeper of a lineage? No, he had to keep it in secret. For a long time, these teachings almost existed in legend, but in fact, they had only gone into hiding. Recently, I have come to realize how all this could so easily have been lost, and how it is being lost in many communities. But he said with a smile, there is a sacred time for everything, and now it is coming back. It is important that it is opening now, because humanity is entering into a major transition when this wisdom will become essential. With the Native people of North America, USA, the Freedom of Religion Act was 1978, so that was a start of the sacred time coming back. They're talking about a ceremony. The purpose of this ceremony is healing, he told us. In order to heal, we must not attempt to destroy the heavy energy that we carry, but to move it through us. He continued, heavy energy is part of us. We have accepted it. These heavy thoughts are our children. You have created them. Sometimes they make you feel as if you are irritated and suffocating, like the smoke from this fire. You can't breathe. You always feel as if there is something else, that you lack something. The hard part is to let this energy go. You know you are healing yourself when you start to feel some freedom from that. When you free this energy, you start to feel relief. You start to relax your spirit. He paused for a moment and then said, "This is very important. Not long ago, we used to work just like everybody does. We thought that you had to destroy, that there was a need to cut. But with the medicine, capital M, we enter into a higher level of consciousness. The medicine tells us that there is no need to destroy anything, because if you do, you are destroying yourself. Because the energy that makes us heal and the energy that makes us suffer are intelligent energies. They know our thoughts and they make us think and feel in order to feed themselves. They feed on your pain. They feed on our suffering. So what we have to do is not to kill them, just as a father would not kill his own son. What a father wants for his son is that he be free, that he be pure. This is the mission that we have to achieve within ourselves. We have to get rid of that heavy energy and get in touch with that energy that makes us happy. We have to receive that energy. It teaches us a lot of wonderful things. That energy teaches us that we can learn from our mistakes. Through that energy, we can transform ourselves. That is why alchemy exists. It is the teaching of transformation. And what are we to transform? We are to transform ourselves into beings of peace and beings of love." "How do we know that?" I wanted to know. Juan Luis nodded. "It starts with forgiveness," he said. "The most important part of forgiveness is beginning a new life and not looking back. It is leaving behind all that has happened. In order to forgive properly, we have to enter into forgiveness on three levels. The first one is to forgive oneself. The second is to forgive generally. And the third is for asking forgiveness for our own actions. To clean our karma and to strengthen our dharma." That goes on in more detail. If we are not at peace with ourselves, we will not be at peace with the world. So the most important thing is to clean up our relationship with ourself. That is why the first level of forgiveness is to forgive oneself. "What happens after we do this?" I asked. "What happens when we are fully healed?" "Then we are ready for the teachings," he said. "What teachings?" I asked. "The medicine teachings from the cosmos." And I can say from personal experience over the years, right before I have had a breakthrough, what I call a breakthrough with the spiritual journey, it actually happened to me a week or so ago. One night, I get like really concerned and really uncomfortable, and then the energy literally changes to the opposite. I had that the other night. I was just sitting there. I felt like I was having some kind of anxiety attack, almost depression. I almost called somebody, and then I got up. I thought about something, and that may have affected it. It was getting clear with some relating with someone. But then I just got the energy to make dinner, and within a few moments, I was so high energy, I felt like a totally different person. And I ended up staying up late that night and starting a poem. And so that's my example of how that heavy energy, if you can go one way, but it can also go another way. And this was touched on with the conversation last week. In other words, you have to acknowledge the trickster energy, but not be illusioned by it. Instead, you must acknowledge the essence of it. The essence of it? The essence of that trickster energy is not what we usually perceive at first. Usually we perceive the surface part of it, what one might think of as, quote, evil, unquote. And that is what we stick with. Often a lot of people get lost in the reaction of it, and that reaction creates a blockage that keeps you from accessing it deeper. So out of fear, out of irritation, you react to it, but the essence is much deeper. It is something you have to journey into further. He saw my confused look. What I mean is, for example, if another shaman does some sorcery work against us, we don't react, because reacting is just playing into the surface part of that trickster energy. When we are facing that trickster energy, our first response is usually fear or pain or anger, all that heavy stuff. But once the first impression is done, what is your next action? Some people would choose to try and send that heavy energy back to whomever sent it to them. But in my personal opinion, you don't need to do that. You don't want to do that. If you open yourself up to that some word, I don't know what it means, that is being sent can be the best gift for you. That That H-U-C-H-A, Hucha, that is being sent can be the best gift for you, because that heavy energy is free energy given by that person, even if it was sent out of jealousy or envy or whatever. Instead, you can use that energy for yourself. It is the best wisdom, the best secret of life. So we journey into the deeper essence of it and use it to feed projects, to make healings, anything. If we go deeper into it, we will eventually find out what it is teaching, what its teaching is. For example, why it is coming to us at this point in our lives. How is it serving us? How is it helping us in our service with the world? So if you send it back to the person, you should send it back as gratitude, because it is free energy that you didn't ask for that. Now, thanks to that person, is coming to you. It is free energy being given. I like that idea, I said, but of course, that kind of thing is always easier said than done. Getting past that first reaction, I mean, how do we do that? You have to be a warrior, said Amado. Every second, every minute of our lives, we are to be warriors of light. It's okay to have that first reaction, and yes, maybe even be afraid or angry. That's natural, but then you must open up more and ask, what is this all about? Go deeper. We need to know the darkness and respect it as well, not take it for granted. That happened, that reminds me of the, during the COVID times when everyone, well, can't say everyone, because that's my point here. You know, a lot of people, most people in the mainstream media were touting the enemy. There was war rhetoric and war language that was used against the virus. And I wrote about it in one of my essays about, like, in Tai Chi, I learned, like, if someone is pushing energy at you, instead of, like, trying to go up against it and resist it, you kind of go back and use that energy, and then you go forward, and then you could push them away. So that was one example. And then I heard from a Lakota friend how the Lakota people and probably other Native people were considering the virus as an intelligence, and that it was here to teach us something. So one of those things for me, it taught me, it enhanced my sense of greater self-reliance, and, you know, being able to just go longer periods of time, not seeing a lot of people. It was like strengthened that, and that deepened my connection with the natural world. And waiting online at a grocery store, I met a neighbor that lived across the street from for like maybe 20 years and barely said hello. And ever since we met, then we've become friends, her and her boyfriend. So that's some of what an example of the asking what is the lesson and using the energy rather than just fighting it and rather than just, you know, considering it the enemy. Obviously, sometimes, you know, if something hurts, you need to put medicine right on it to heal. But looking also at the energy is my interpretation of that deeper level. And further on, this is where Hillary says, my understanding is that the symbol is not just a symbol, but it actually is the thing that it stands for. Is that right? I asked. Yes, but also no. The symbol is the materialized part. It is like with food when it goes to a laboratory. They can see the chemical and physical aspect of it. They can say it has iron, it has this protein, and that vitamin. That's the physical part of it. But behind the physical part, there is the spirit of it. That is where it becomes unity. You can't just know the symbol and its meaning. You need to enter deeper into the essence of it and find out how you can be of service with that essence in unity with you. At that frequency, you can access into the spirit of that symbol. Otherwise, it stays in theory as a sacred symbol. If you don't vibrate with its spirit, vibrating at that intensity, then the symbol is just a symbol. And then later on, he says, you must enter into the spirit of it. That's what vibrating into Yanantin means. That is the essence of Yanantin. And then later on, I waited and finally looking back and forth from Amado to Don Ignacio said, so then, tell me, how do we know if we are being misled? Only by listening to yourself, Don Ignacio said, because something, when you are no longer in harmony, will know. Something will always know, and it will let you know. It's just a process, and it doesn't have to be hard. That's the thing. It doesn't have to be hard. And then later on, what happens if you get distracted? You'll be distracted. What is it that you are looking for? The forms or the essence? Which should you choose? What is your mission on your spiritual journey or on your spiritual path? It is to arrive at a connection with the whole, with the absolute, that which we know as God, as love, or however you want to name it. If you go to a church and you pray in the way you were taught, you are entering into the formalities of how you should talk with God, and you don't actually talk with God because you are just in the formality of it. It would be different if you just talk to God directly. When you are with the medicine, capital M, for example, you enter into an absolute connection with the whole. You don't need symbology. You won't get lost in the formalities. Andean philosophy stresses the importance of experience as the best means of revealing knowledge. And then a quote I like that I mentioned last week, while you may get out of balance, you know where to look in order to get in balance. While the modernist perspective very often hacks the Gordian knot of morality into two, thus creating polarizations and absolutes such as this is moral, that is immoral, both the postmodern and Andean perspectives recognize that nothing is that clean and simple. Both philosophies urge us to consider an issue from all sides, then slowly and carefully attempt to unravel it to gain some greater sense of clarity. It is not that we should cease taking stands ethically, these philosophical perspectives suggest, but rather that we need to be aware of the limitations of the human perspective and of the habitual constructs that become so ingrained in us that we cease to be consciously aware of them. Instead of relying upon a standardized system of ethics, the individual must therefore make the effort to consider an issue anew in each moment before deciding which to be the correct or most ethical course of action to take. This sense of personal responsibility, it has been argued, makes the individual more moral, not less. As Bauman puts it, uncertainty is bound to accompany the condition of the moral self forever. Indeed, one can recognize the moral self by its uncertainty. A little anecdote about that is sometimes just like trying to reach someone on the phone and, you know, keep missing, and then one time it was just like totally spur of the moment. I called the person and they picked up and they said they are actually expecting a call from somebody else. So that's why they picked up. But I use that example to say that it was a spur of the moment thing. It was tuning into the energy of the moment and what was actually going on rather than just me trying to figure out what would be the quote best time. I mean, that's not a moral issue, but it does exemplify tuning into to the sense of just sometimes how things click. And someone might say, oh, you can, you know, you don't bother calling that person. You can never reach them. And I was like, yeah, I got them on the phone. And it was just like a spontaneous in the moment. I got a call right now. So I think that's part of that. If you don't think too much, there's a time for thinking and a time for not thinking. And that spontaneous, in the flow, not thinking is perhaps what Hillary mentioned towards the end in the conversation, is that non-linear. Because that spur of the moment thing, you're not stopping to think it through. It's not very linear. It's just in the flow of life. I could read more. I want to read more because I enjoy refreshing my memory with this stuff. And so again, I'll recommend for those of you who want to delve into such learnings, Hillary S. Webb's Yanantin and Masintin in the Andean World, Complementary Dualism in Modern Peru. You can find out about the book and more of her literary and other efforts at her website, hillarysweb.com. Thanks for listening and be well.